This show was first broadcast on Free FM 89.0, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access radio station. For more information on our station and our wide range of programs, visit freefm.org.nz. Podcasting. It's easier than you think, and Free FM has everything you need, from help with initial planning right through to hosting and delivery across popular podcast platforms. Our content creators are just ordinary people delivering engaging weekly podcasts and radio shows on all sorts of issues that affect them, their communities, and our society. We're really keen to support new content by, for, and about a wide range of community groups and issues. Interested? Go to freefm.org.nz or see our Facebook page to find out more.
Kia ora, welcome to Connect with Community Waikato on Free FM 89.0. Holly Snape here today, and I am with Ellie Wilkinson. How are you, Ellie?
I'm wonderful, thank you.
Thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
We're talking today about HMS Trust. So this is a fantastic organisation. It's been in the community for a really long time now.
Yes, it has actually. We're coming up next year. We're going to be planning a celebration for our 21st. So we've been around since 1999.
Isn't that brilliant? And you know, and you're so central. You're centrally based, and you're a service that's available really for anybody who's from somewhere else and come here.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Newcomers, and that includes former refugees under the quota system and through reunification, along with new migrants, pretty much anybody who's a newcomer to Hamilton City. And we are based at the Settlement Centre Waikato on Boundary Road. Many people have been around for a long time know it as the Hamilton, Old Hamilton Marist Club Rooms. So we're a fantastic site. We're not purpose-built, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic site on the park and really central and easy for people to find.
It is a really good location, you know, right in the heart of the city, really. Just a stone's throw from the CBD.
Yes.
You know, wonderfully central that way. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit today about what it is you're set up to do, and then we're going to have a conversation about more specifically some of the things you are doing in our community. But so give me a little bit of a background. Why is it you're there?
Well, we've been there for some time. That came out of Hamilton City Council putting out to the public what would be a good use for that space. And the Trust at the time put a proposal to Council that we needed a place for newcomers and a hub of services. And we were the Trust was successful, and we've been there since 2005.
Were you there before or after the mosque, which is really just across the road?
Do you know what? I think around about the same time.
Yeah.
I've been in my role there for 10 years, so I'm a little bit unsure about prior to that.
Yep.
But I think it's around about the same time we've been. I always say, if you can't find us, we're between the two M's. We're McDonald's in the mosque. We're in the middle.
Yeah. It's a good way to put it as well.
Yeah.
So that's what came about. And it's actually interesting that the council kind of drove a process to find out what the community wanted. So that's fantastic.
Yes.
And obviously a proposal came forward for migrant and refugee supporting these settlers. Do you know historically what was happening with settler numbers at that point?
Well, we've been a refugee settlement city for some time, but it was clear the numbers were growing. And you know, the Trust was formed out of language not being a barrier to access services. That was the very core of what the Trust was about. And we're in the Trust was in a little office in Knox Street. But it was really clear that we were a growing, diverse city, and we needed to do better and respond better to newcomers. And the original Trust saw this as a really good opportunity to bring some services together and be a little bit more collaborative and stronger with how we resource it. So we've been in there. So the Trust, Hamilton Multicultural Services Trust, has many projects, and one of them is the Settlement Centre. So the Trust has had responsibility for management, maintenance, and for service provision out of the centre with City Council since 2005. So we're pretty proud of delivering a really good space Yeah. It's a really great community resource.
Yeah, most definitely. We're going to turn to some of the things you do, because you've got quite a range of programs and activities that go on there, and I know that you guys are bursting at the seams.
Yes, we are. We're definitely bursting at the seams.
So you've got some future plans as well, but let's roll back first and look at what are some of the core offerings that you provide the community.
Okay, so first of all, it's a community space. So we have around about 39 regular community users of that space, and then there's lots of other casual groups that come in for, and government agencies and other NGOs come in and use that space for meetings and a variety of other purposes. So we have the community space, but located in that space, we have a collective of agencies that support settlement. We have English language partners. Waikato is based there, and we do a number of language classes right throughout the day and into the evening.
So when you say language classes, are you talking language as in learning English, or are you talking language as in teaching young kids the mother tongue perhaps?
So there's a mix of that. So English language partners is responsible for newcomers to learning English, literacy, conversational language, workplace language, language for driving, language for the police. So there's a variety of, they do rural provision as well. So that's English language passes, and they're based there. We also have a number of ethnic migrant groups who come in and teach the mother tongue. Sorry, yeah. So Chinese, we had the Japanese group there for some time, Korean, we have the Afghan, Spanish. So there's a mix of that.
I'm sure you've heard as well people making comments like, oh, in New Zealand you only need English now, you know, why are you teaching these kids, you know, Chinese or Spanish, you know, what's your response to that kind of concern or attitude?
Well, it's really interesting because we are a diverse world. In fact, I grew up only learning English, and I wish I'd been exposed to the opportunity of being multilingual. I have a husband who's in his fourth year of learning Te Reo, and I'm pretty proud of him, and so I'm learning it through him. And once I can find the time, I will really be focusing on that myself. But people come here from all over the world. It's not unusual when you come from Europe and a whole lot of other places, various countries in Africa, that you speak several languages. I think because we're down at the bottom of the world and, you know, everybody speaks English, they think it's okay. But we also, people need to speak their mother tongue, because there's a whole lot of things that come with language. There's a whole lot of ways around culture and values and how you communicate that is important to preserve language. And the one great thing I love about the centre is you can come in there and at any time you can have several conversations going in different languages, the way it should be.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. So that's kind of just a small element of what it is you do. What else have you got going on in this space?
Well, we have Decipher. I'm not sure if many of the listeners have heard of Decipher. So we have Decipher, which that was the very core of what the trust was about. So that's now our translation and interpreting service. And we do, in fact, we did over 6,000 interpreting jobs last year.
So that is a hugely used service. How many people do you have actually doing the translations?
So we have interpreters. We have over 160 interpreters on our books.
Fantastic.
Average about 400 to 500 jobs a month. A lot of that work is with the hospital, the courts, various agencies who are supporting a client, but language is a barrier through clinics and the PHOs, midwives clinics, counselling services, you name it, where English is not the first language and people need to understand and have clarity, then an interpreter is used. We also do lots of translation of documents. You can imagine if you come here and you need a marriage certificate or a birth certificate, those are required in English. So we do lots of that. We have big companies asking us to translate contracts. Yeah, it's really mixed and varied.
It certainly sounds it. But and you have to go through quite a process to become an official translator as well, eh? It's not like you can go, well, I can speak two languages, so let me do this.
Because it's really important that you operate within a code of ethics.
Yeah.
It's really important to the people that you're interpreting for the giver and the receiver of information, that you operate in a very strict code of ethics. It's really important to understand what a court looks like when you're going into a courtroom, what it might look like when you're going into an operating theatre in a hospital. It's not like you can just bowl up. You can imagine there's a lot of legal jargon, there's a lot of health language, medical language. So, yeah, it's really important to go through the court. Also really important for the interpreter to understand what their role is. We do a lot of professional development for them. They can be exposed to really traumatic situations, so it's important we look after our interpreters.
It's a really good point too, actually, particularly with the hospitals and the courts and things, spaces like that.
There was the accident not long ago with the Chinese group and that bus accident. We had to have interpreters up at Waikato Hospital supporting them through a terrific time, so it's really important that our interpreters are looked after as well. Also, it's important that we have interpreters in the community. You can imagine you wouldn't want a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old child interpreting for a mum who's just been told by a doctor that she might have breast cancer or something like that. That's not something you want to put family through.
No, absolutely. No, that it makes an absolute lot of sense. So, I mean, that's a significant part of the work you're doing. 6,000 in a year.
I know, it's a lot, isn't it?
It's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah.
And you guys are the only ones doing that around here?
Well, we feel like we are pretty much covering anything from the Bombay Hills down to Wellington.
Wow.
Yeah. Our interpreters do jobs. We've had interpreters go to Invercargill. We've had interpreters go all over the country, but pretty much between the Bombay Hills and Wellington.
Yeah. So is there a fee for that service for everybody? Like, I can imagine there is certainly a fee when you're working with government agencies and hospitals, you know, and those sorts of things. I'm just wondering, for families that might not be able to afford a cost, like, how do you manage some of that?
Yeah, so we do advocate for a professional interpreter. We think it's really important that that person is placed, and I guess like anything, there is a cost to it.
Absolutely.
We do have contracts with the DHB for delivery of service, so any client who's going to the hospital, the DHB covers the cost. If you're with the Midlands Clinic and you're a former refugee accessing Midland Clinic service, there's a contract that cost is covered. We also have what we call community rates for organisations in the community, because we want to make sure that they can access interpreters. So we keep that where we feel it's feasible for them to be able to do that. So, and we always, Leanne, who's the business manager for our language services, she's really open to having conversations about how we can remove cost as a barrier in some way or another.
So it might be a payment plan or some other options that just make it accessible for people.
Yes. Generally it's not the client who's paying for the service. Generally it's the provider of the service that's paying for that interpreter.
Yeah, that makes some sense as well.
Yeah.
Look, we're going to take a little bit of a break, play some Eddie's music actually. I just thought, for a little bit of fun, I'm playing Betty Davis Eyes.
Love it.
That's a good song.
About my era, I think.
Yeah, about mine too. All right, we'll be back very shortly.
Her hair is hollow gold, her lips sweet surprise, her hands are never cold. She's got Betty Davis eyes. She'll turn her music on you, you won't have to think twice. She's pure as New York snow. She got Betty Davis eyes, and she'll tease you, she'll unease you, all the better just to please you. She's precocious and she knows just what it takes to make a pro blush. She got Greta Garbo standoff size. She's got Betty Davis eyes. She'll let you take her home. What's her appetite? with the crumbs she throws you. She's ferocious, and she knows just what it takes to make it pro blush. All the boys think she's a spy. She's got Betty Davis eyes. And she'll tease you. She'll unease you, all the better just to please you. She's precocious, and she knows just what it takes to make it pro blush. All the boys think she's a spy. She's got Betty Davis eyes. She'll unease you just to please you. She's got Betty Davis eyes. She'll expose you when she snows you. She knows you.
It is a classic song, isn't it? Betty Davis eyes. I'm with Ellie Wilkinson from HMS Trust, Hamilton Multicultural Services Trust. It's quite a mouthful, probably.
It is a mouthful.
HMS Trust is probably a little easier.
Yes. When you're out somewhere talking and you say, I'm Ellie Wilkinson from Hamilton Multicultural Services Trust based at the Settlement Centre, Waikato.
Yes.
I hope they're not asleep by the time I finish that sentence.
It is a long sentence. You've talked about renaming at points or...
Well, it used to be the Waikato Migrant Resource Centre.
That's right.
And a few years ago, we felt like the name didn't reflect everything that was happening in that space.
Yeah.
So we did a bit of a survey and we consulted with a few people and we came up with some options and then we put that out and Settlement Centre Waikato was the winner.
Yeah. Look, and it does say what you do. So, I mean, that's fantastic. We're going through a range of the services that you guys offer, and it is huge. Your range of services is massive. And in fact, the size of the space that you're operating from, doing not only stuff really in Hamilton or in the Waikato, but actually servicing the whole of New Zealand for some of the things you do, quite amazing. Can we turn quickly to the driving school, though? Because that's been a really successful initiative, hasn't it?
It's been hugely successful. So Tanya Poynton, she's the business manager for our transport services, and we call them transport services now because we don't just do driving, we have cycle training as well. And we are now the national provider for the Open Road program, which is helping former refugees to learn how to drive. So we have our Passport to Drive community driving school based at the centre, and then we have the Open Road, which is supporting refugee families to learn to drive and to be independent. And we are, for the next 3 years, we're contracted by government to deliver that nationally, and that's going to build, we're in 7 sites at the moment, and that's going to build to 13 sites, so that's pretty exciting. And that came out of a small pilot program that we ran at the centre, because we identified there were some real barriers to...
What are the barriers that people were facing in terms of getting a licence?
There are several things, and, you know, we're a highly regulated driving country.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to drive. Even though we encourage public transport and cycling, everybody wants to do their own thing in their own time. And so what we found was that people who were coming to see us would set their driver's license, but they would fail, and they wouldn't really understand why they were failing. English is not their first language, so communication was probably not the best. So what they would do is they'd book the test for 2 weeks' time and think, oh, they'll have another go, without really understanding what they had to refine and change so that they would be successful. And when you hear someone sitting 2 or 3 times and failing, in the end they don't, and then they just drive around without their driver's license, and you know that can lead to interactions with the law, and you can end up going down what we call a rabbit hole. So we did a lot of work talking with NZTA, with City Council, with the police, what are some of the barriers, and we spent about a year doing that. Tanya's taken the lead on that project. She's done an amazing job. And out of a small pilot program that we ran with some City Council money that they gave us, we identified what the barriers were. We developed that into a community driving school. And then because we had such really good systems and templates and continued to talk to NZTA and the police, we've now developed this really fantastic program. And if I can quote you some, just here, 42 clients passed their restricted test through the Open Road program. And in our passport to drive, we delivered 2,253 lessons.
Wow.
Yeah, and 39 people went through our cycling program. And we had 107 successful participants get their driver's license. So that's hugely significant for people in the community.
That is.
To be driving legally and safely. And it's also really good to know for the host community to know that people are driving legally and safely on the road and not making assumptions that they're driving around without their driver's license.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. So you've got a contract now to do that nationally.
Yes.
I mean, that's massive, from a small little pilot project supported by Hamilton City Council to a national contract to deliver a program around the country supporting people in the space.
Yeah.
Really, really cool. So I take it you do that through collaboration with service providers in other areas, or how are you?
Of course, you can't do something like this on your own. You can have the seed of the idea and you can, you know, hammer away at it and fine tune it, but something this big and this significant really needs a lot of people to buy into it.
Yeah.
And then that's how you move to it being recognised nationally as making a big difference and really important. So yeah, I think people in Hamilton and the Waikato can be pretty proud of what we do here.
Yeah.
We're not afraid to tackle a problem.
Punching above your weight, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about the future, because we've only got about sort of 6 minutes left, so we don't have a lot of time. But you've got some pretty big plans.
Yes, we do. We actually have actual real plans, you know. So for some time now, the Trust has recognised that our city is growing, diversity is growing. We have more and more people. In fact, in the last 12 months, we had 700 new inquiries. So that's not people who are revisiting our services or accessing various parts of our services, that 700 people coming in through the doors of the settlement centre and looking for support in 12 months. So that's a lot. And we need a bigger building. We need to be able to respond to the needs out in the community. We need a bigger place for people to gather. We need more learning spaces. We have one office that's holding 6 desks in it. Ideally, 4 is a push.
Yeah.
So we're all on top
You're
of each
bursting.
Other. We are absolutely bursting. And we can't accommodate all the demand for the use of the centre. So,
and also, you know, you guys have been so innovative. It would also limit your opportunities to create new programs and concepts.
Absolutely. The Trust has just committed to the new role of a community connector. So that's someone who's going to be on our team, who's going to be connecting people more with social service agencies, government departments, advocating for them more, doing more of that deeper work out in the community that an inquiry at the front counter can't manage. So we're lucky that we have an internal placement for that. So that person has a desk, but when we replace the role that she's in, I'm just not sure, we'll be doing mezzanine floors or something like that. Amazing team there, happy. We just squash in as hot desks and all sorts of things. So yes, we have a new centre on the plans, and we've been really lucky that Hamilton City Council have approved the footprint for us to remain on the park.
Yeah, that's great. And it's actually, like, how much bigger are you becoming?
2/3 at this stage.
Yeah, so I mean, it's quite significant, the change.
It's quite significant, but not significant enough to scare park users that we're taking over the park.
Not at all. Actually, the design you've got, I think, is very clever in that in all honesty, it really doesn't look like it encroaches on the park, really.
We hope not. We're doing a lot of work and lots of consulting and learning at the moment of how we can integrate it into the park. So it looks like it should be there and will naturally sit there. And it, yeah, we'll use materials that just makes it look like it's really a part of that whole space.
Yeah.
And also doing some clever things to integrate it in for the wider public as well, walking paths and making the car park more user-friendly, having bike stations so people can come and put their bikes there, all sorts of things.
Do you know, one of the things I think is most appealing about where you guys are, how you guys are, I suppose, in terms of where you are, is that you're not fenced off from the park. You're not separate. You're actually really integrated into that space, and I think that that's a really welcoming concept.
Yeah, and we really want to incorporate that in the new building. You can imagine there are some difficulties with that. We have a deck at the moment that's butts right up to the classrooms, and if someone decides to hook their volleyball net onto the side of the pole and play some music, and we've got some language classes going, we have to sort of work together on that. There will be some
double glazing might resolve some of those issues.
Yeah, well, future building definitely.
Yeah.
But we'll just have some soft planting and bits that will just give us a bit of space between where the activities are happening and sort of rolling out softly onto the park.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah. So we're running out of time, Owen. I do want to just finish off with some contact details as well. So if someone's listening and they're thinking, actually, there's some stuff here, or I'd like to learn more, you've got an extensive, would they go to a website, or are you a Facebook?
Yes. Yes, we have all of those. Most people will go to Settlement Centre Waikato website, so www.scw.org.nz. We have the Trust website, which has all our services, and that's around our computers and homes, our migrant employment service.
Is computers and homes still running?
Computers and homes are still running, support our refugee families.
Fantastic. Yep. Is that still through 2020 Trust, or is that...
Yes, so they're still working in conjunction with Ministry of Education.
Fantastic. Yeah. That's really good.
So you can go in there, our information service, all the other agencies that operate out of the centre, go there, or go to the Trust website. You can go to our driving. We have little websites for all our services, so you can go directly to that specific information, and it all links up to our website page as well.
So that's absolutely fantastic. Really appreciate you coming in and having a chat today and letting us know about the amazing things you guys do. It's very cool.
Thank you, Holly. Really enjoyed talking to you about what we do.
And we'll get you back once you're starting on this big process and have a chat about how it's all going.
2021, that's our plan.
Well, we'll hopefully talk before then, but...
That'd be great.
Awesome. It's Ali Wilkinson from HMS Trust down there, Boundary Road. Do go check them out. They're doing awesome things. And in the meantime, you have been listening to Connect with Community Waikato on Free FM 89.0.
For more episodes of this Community Access Radio show, please visit freefm.org.nz. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this podcast possible by funding the Access Internet Radio Project.